So again, greetings to you all and a warm welcome to everyone. I want to talk this evening on the theme of gratitude and love. And this is a quite personal talk this evening, probably more personal than almost all talks that I've given. And it's a talk that's really focused on my mother and on gratitude and kind of broadening out from there. And I want to just begin by saying that my mother died 5 weeks ago in London. And I traveled back there just after her death. And again, 2 weeks later for her funeral, kind of a little bit later than is typical here for reasons we don't need to get into right now. But I want to tell you a little bit about her. She was 91 when she died, and she had 9 children, and I was the second. She had 21 grandchildren and 10 great-grandchildren, one more on the way in next week or in the next 2 weeks. And she was, I think, the kindest person I've known in my life. And certainly felt her kindness more directly and closely than anyone I've known. And I want to share a little bit about her and about her life, just kind of briefly. She was born here in the US, in New York City. Her parents, my grandparents, had immigrated from Ireland in the early 1920s. But when the Great Depression came, you know, later in that decade, the family returned to Ireland in 1930. I think they saw their prospects living in a small fishing village in the southwest of Ireland as more hopeful than Depression-era New York. I kind of think it was probably a wise, wise decision. Certainly wise from their standpoint. My mother told me how on the early morning of the last day of their voyage, obviously by ship, back to Ireland, she was lifted up and she saw the lights of her West Cork village shining as the villagers there welcomed Nora Collins, who's my grandmother, and her 2 children, my mother, Kathleen, and her sister, Mary, back to their, the village of their ancestry. And it's an image, when I wasn't there, obviously, but it's one that I've always found, since I heard it, a very powerful one. It was on, their village was on the coast, and where the ship came in was just, tens of miles a little further up the coast. And she had a very happy childhood in West Cork that I think was the source of her strength in later life. The family experienced many of the hardships of the 1930s. It wasn't easy, obviously, anywhere, really. But they never went hungry, thanks to the generosity and the kindness and the kind of barter system, but also the generosity of their relatives and the fishing nets of their neighbors. And that was always a very powerful, her childhood was a very powerful grounding place in her life. She moved from Ireland to England near the end of World War II, and 1944 or 1945. She met my dad in London in the late 1940s. And she lived most of her life in England, probably 3/4 of her life in England. But she always remained an Irish Catholic woman who never lost her Irish accent. And I think when I think of my mom, there's so much that I'm grateful to her for. I don't remember this, but, I was told that she carried me up the hill up to the hospital when, as a young child, I pulled a hot treacle down on my chest and burned my chest. I still have the scars from that. And she wrote poems for my brother and me that we had to do for our school homework, you know, when we had any mental blocks or maybe blocks of laziness. She helped us by writing poems for us. And I think of her smile every time she held a young child, you know, my grandchildren and all my siblings' children and great-grandchildren. And I also think of her determination and courage that really kept our family together through really quite difficult times. You know, it wasn't the Great Depression, but after World War II, bringing up a family of 9 children on a postal worker's wages in London in the 1950s and 1960s was not easy. And I saw it, obviously experienced it firsthand, how, you know, how she worked to make ends meet. And probably many of your parents, maybe grandparents, have had a similar history through the kind of the harder times. And it allowed me to see her, to see a determination and a strength. I know, throughout her life, she had a wonderful sense of humor and an ability to see the funny side of any situation, even as in her last few years, her mind declined. She always she could see the funny side of things. You know, she could see, you know, if my brother was wearing, you know, yellow training shoes, you know, kind of like, you know, that how people might look at that. And I had the good fortune over the past 30 or so years of traveling with her many times. Often we went to Ireland, you know, go to where she grew up, and probably went together maybe 9 or 10 times, traveling together, walking together through the little kind of roads, the little boreens of the west of Ireland and the south of Ireland, and pretty much all over Ireland, other places too. And I have a lot of joy thinking about our times together. I just want to share that just as a little bit of a background for a reflection. You know, I was thinking after she passed that I think we can never really know how we'll respond to the death of a parent, even if we've already lost one parent, how it will be to lose the other parent. And for me, it's been different than I'd imagined. You know, I thought a lot as she declined, you know, mentally and physically in her final years, how it would be to lose her in a kind of more final sense. And it's been different. You know, I imagined it somewhat differently than it's been, because it's actually been less painful and more filled with gratitude and with love. And I want to talk a little bit about this, a little bit of the experience after she died. I was actually in New York, where she was born, not that far away, where my daughter lives with her children. And when I got the news, I was actually planning to be in fly to London the next day, so I left a day early. And I got there the day after she died. And in the week after her death, I was able to sit with her every day. I don't know, maybe some of you have had the opportunity of sitting with somebody after they've died, and maybe a parent or maybe a family member. And for me, it was one of the most powerful experiences of my life. You know, I'd go in each day and I'd sit with her, arrange to be with her. They'd take her body out from the cold, you know, cold area where the bodies are stored, and I'd come and I'd sit and I'd meditate with her for half an hour, maybe an hour. You know, I'd hold her arm, maybe put my hand on her cheek, maybe touch her hair, and you know, I had the opportunity to thank her for all that she'd given us. And, you know, I did the best that I could over that week to to accompany her as she kind of at least began her transition into the mystery of life after our physical death. I don't claim to have a clear vision of what that looks like. I have a sense, you know, as many in the Buddhist tradition have, that it doesn't all kind of come to a full stop when the breath stops, you know, that there's some continuity of consciousness. You know, I couldn't prove that in a scientific way, but I have a strong sense that there's that continuity. And I wanted to be there and, you know, in whatever way communicate and accompany her in that early part of her, if you like, her journey. And outside of, you know, when I wasn't visiting her, I walked many miles each day after visiting her in the funeral home. And my own experience was of the sadness and the tears really coming in waves and flowing very easily. You know, the sadness, the grieving, wasn't in any way, hasn't really ever since she died been a painful sadness, been a, you know, a kind of a suffering sadness. It's been a sadness that, you know, is grieving her loss, but it's held in a well of gratitude for her kindness and for her life. You know, when I think about it, you know, I'll say a little bit more about some reflections on her life and where the gratitude flows from, and more generally about gratitude. But I want to, you know, I just want to finish this kind of reflection on her life and just by reflecting on how grateful I am for her life and for her love. And I have a feeling, really, that she's with me now as much as she was when she was alive. I don't know if some of you have that experience with people who passed on, that they're kind of they're living in you and with you. And I want to share what I find a really beautiful story from the Vietnamese Zen teacher Thich Nhat Hanh, the poet, activist. Wonderful, wonderful teacher. He tells of his experience of the death of his mother that really speaks very much to my own experience. And this is what Thich Nhat Hanh shared. He said, "The day my mother died, I wrote in my journal, 'A serious misfortune of my life has arrived. I suffered for more than 1 year after the passing away of my mother. But one night in the highlands of Vietnam, I was sleeping in the hut in my hermitage. I dreamed of my mother. I saw myself sitting with her, and we were having a wonderful talk. She looked young and beautiful, her hair flowing down. It was so pleasant to sit there and talk to her, as if she had never died. When I woke up, it was about 2 a.m, and I felt very strongly that I had never lost my mother. The impression that my mother was still with me was very clear. I understood then that the idea of having lost my mother was just an idea. It was obvious in that moment that my mother is always alive in me. I opened the door and went outside. The entire hillside was bathed in moonlight. It was a hill covered with tea plants, and my hut was set behind the temple halfway up. Walking slowly in the moonlight through the rows of tea plants, I noticed my mother was still with me. She was the moonlight, caressing me as she had done so often. Very tender, very sweet, wonderful. Each time my feet touched the earth, I knew my mother was there with me. I knew this body was not mine, but a living continuation of my mother and my father and my grandparents and my great-grandparents, of all my ancestors. Those feet that I saw as my feet were actually our feet. Together, my mother and I were leaving footprints in the damp soil. From that moment on, the idea that I had lost my mother no longer existed. All I had to do was to look at the palm of my hand, feel the breeze on my face, or the earth under my feet, to remember that my mother is always with me, available at any time. So I wanted to begin with by sharing just a reflection on my own personal gratitude to my mother for all that she gave me and all that she gave to our family, and just the courage and determination and love that she brought to us all and to life. And over these last weeks, really the heart of my own spiritual practice has been gratitude. And I want to kind of broaden out a little from focusing on my mother to focusing a little more on this practice of gratitude and the benefits of practicing gratitude in this rest of this talk. Gratitude, like other qualities of the heart that we can cultivate, like compassion, joy, loving kindness, equanimity, is a practice that we can consciously cultivate by reflecting on what we're grateful for and those to whom we're grateful. So by reflecting in this way, we become more grateful. And some of the outcomes, really, of cultivating or feeling gratitude, feeling grateful, feeling thankful, feeling appreciative, is that people also feel more loving, more forgiving, joyful, enthusiastic. These come from many, many studies of gratitude. You know, there's been a researcher, Robert Emmons, teaches in Southern California, written extensively on gratitude. So we become more grateful with practice. Can I just check in with you? Do any of you have a regular practice of gratitude, of a daily practice or a regular practice? Yeah, quite a lot of you. So in many ways, I'm kind of preaching to the choir of encouraging the cultivation of gratitude. But I see from both my understanding of gratitude, of the science and the research of gratitude, but even more powerfully my own experience of the practice, particularly over this time with my mother, just the power of gratitude. And I'll talk some more about this. We become more grateful with practice. Each time we choose to be grateful, the next time it becomes easier. You know, it's like mindfulness, but each time we bring the attention back, it strengthens our capacity to be here. You know, makes it, you know, slightly easier to come back. With all of the kind of healthy habits, the more we practice them, the more they become our default, rather than our default being caught up in, you know, painful, difficult emotions and mind states. So each time we choose to be grateful, the next time it becomes easy. But as you are no doubt aware, it's easy not to be grateful because our minds have evolved over millions of years to focus more on the negative than the positive. Probably familiar with this, you know, that how evolution has kind of the survival benefits of focusing on the negative have kind of primed our brains, really, our minds, to be more vigilant about what's going to go wrong, rather than paying attention to, you know, what is going to go right or what could be beneficial. You know, you may be aware of Rick Hansen's work, you know, wonderful teacher and writer, psychologist, neuroscientist. He says that our minds are like Velcro for negative information and like Teflon for positive. You know, it's a, you know, it's always a, it's a very clever, but it's a very powerful kind of metaphor that we kind of hold on tightly to the negative because our, you know, survival of our ancestors was more linked to that. And we kind of can bounce off of the positive. You know, somebody says something nice to you or gives you a compliment, you're not so likely to remember that as if somebody is mean to you. Say, oh, you did a lousy job on that report, you know. Or you give a talk and people say, oh, that was a terrible talk, you know, whatever. You know, you're going to focus on that. If you've been a teacher and you've been evaluated and you've got 90 thumbs up and, you know, 5 or 7 thumbs down, you know, well, what did I do wrong? You know, kind of our minds are like this. So we really do need to train ourselves in gratitude as well as in these other qualities of compassion and loving kindness and joy, one of these. This research, a great deal of research, particularly in the last 10, 15 years on gratitude. One of the leading researchers is Barbara Frederickson down at the UNC. And she and her colleagues showed that what are often called positive emotions, I'm not crazy about the term positive emotions, but just use that for, you know, just for simplicity right now. Like joy, like gratitude and contentment, they can undo the negative effects of emotions like anger and fear and shame. You know, they've done studies where, you know, they prime people with getting them agitated or fearful or angry, and then they bring in a kind of invite positive qualities to arise, and they compare them with, you know, maybe something neutral, and they find that cultivating these more positive qualities can undo the negative effects of anger, fear, shame, etc. You know, we can't be grateful and be angry at the same time. We can't be filled with loving kindness, but at the same time filled with fear. It's not the way our minds work. So these cultivating a quality like gratitude helps to really neutralize more painful, more difficult emotions and mind states. And I'll say a little bit more about that in a minute in just terms of my own personal experience. But I want to just take a moment or two to share some of the benefits of gratitude. You know, the studies have shown that gratitude has one of the strongest links to mental health and to satisfaction with life of any personality trait. So it's more so than optimism or hope or compassion, more linked to positive mental health, satisfaction with life. Studies also show that grateful people experience higher levels of emotions like joy, enthusiasm, love, optimism, happiness. And, you know, as I've kind of been alluding to, gratitude protects us from destructive or more painful emotions like and mind states like envy and resentment and greed. You know, it can be an antidote to those more challenging or painful qualities. And here's some interesting information. People who experience gratitude can cope better with everyday stress, recover from illness more quickly, and enjoy better physical health. And people who keep a gratitude journal, maybe some of you do that, are 25% happier, sleep half an hour more each evening on average, and exercise 33% more each week than those not keeping a journal. So that's the kind of the controlled studies of kind of showing what comes with the conscious cultivation of gratitude over time, how it can transform our hearts and minds, really can transform our lives, can be one of the most healthy habits, if you like, to cultivate. One of the things that I've found very effective, and this is somewhat linked to the meditation that we did earlier, what I found very effective is if I'm feeling stressed or angry or fearful, and I'm really kind of caught up in one of those emotions for a while, you know, what I will do as a practice is, as you're probably familiar with, is to just recognize what's present, bring a kind, non-judging awareness to the bodily feelings, whatever emotions are here, bring awareness to thoughts without getting kind of caught up in the thoughts. Just see, oh, that's an angry thought, or that's an anxious or a fearful thought. You know, just as we do in our basic practice of working with what's arising, we just let everything come. Let it come, let it be, let it go. You know, that's the really, if you like, step one in the practice. Because it can be easy to, when we use a positive quality, it can be a way of pushing away a more negative emotion, kind of an avoidance. And it's not helpful to do this as an avoidance. We begin with recognizing and allowing what is here to be here, exploring it, being with it. And then, though, we can then consciously choose to cultivate gratitude. You know, that the meditation I was inviting you to do in that was kind of consciously shift the channel. You know, change the channel from the, you know, just we did in the meditation, from the breath to sounds to emotions, that we can use our awareness in this way. We can focus our psychic energy in these kind of ways. So what we're doing in this way is, if we're caught up, or can be, if we're caught up in a painful mind state or emotion, opening to it, and then consciously choosing to change the channel to gratitude. In other circumstances, could be, or even in those same circumstances, it could also be to compassion, or to loving kindness, or to joy. You know, I'm focusing particularly here, obviously, on gratitude and the power of gratitude. But it's the same process with these other, you know, positive heart-opening qualities as well. We kind of shift to them. And what can happen is that by consciously cultivating and practicing gratitude, the mind becomes more open, more spacious, less tight and contracted, more open to happiness and well-being. And, you know, I found this in a very, 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 you know, very real way. You know, over these last few weeks, I continued to teach and, you know, have responsibilities, and I found myself getting caught up in, you know, stress and, you know, I've got to do this, I've got to do that, you know, am I going to be able to do it all? And, you know, I actually found myself really pushing through, you know, and not really, but at times not paying enough attention to the fact that I'm not 25 anymore. You know, I'm not 30 or 35 anymore. You know, that as we get older, it's, you know, it's not so easy to go with, you know, the ups and downs and the changes in temperature and all of that. I experience kind of working with those more challenging states. If I could bring my attention back, and for me it was somewhat easy in this period, because I'd kind of envisioned my mother kind of walking together with her and feeling, you know, experiencing that gratitude to her for her life and all that she'd given me and given our family. And then my heart could open. And it was like that. What was the difficult or painful mind state didn't necessarily just vanish, but it could be held, and it didn't have to be so problematical. It was like the tightness you know, almost like being caught up in a fist, you know, the mind being caught up in that way. Hard, you know, like you feel you can't open it. Even your mind thinks, you know, I know that this, I'm stuck in this, but somehow there's a pattern, a groove in the mind where we're, whether it's anxiety or fear or anger or whatever the emotion is, we can get locked in that. And so how do we unlock it? You know, the basic practice of mindfulness is obviously a key to that, being with our experience. But this is also, this shifting of our awareness is also a very, very key practice. You know, this kind of what I call changing the channel, you know, like with the radio station. The Buddha said, whatever a monk, think of a monk, a practitioner, frequently thinks about and ponders on, that will become the inclination of their mind. Think that. Whatever someone, anyone, frequently thinks about and ponders on, that will become the inclination of the mind. So if you think angry thoughts, you know, you think about your political figure that you have a real kind of animosity towards, and you're, oh, there's that person again, and you kind of keep thinking those thoughts. The more that becomes the default, you know, the more that becomes the habit, the pattern of mind. We cultivate these qualities by how we use our attention, how we use that, what I term the psychic energy, where we put our psychic energy. So we cultivate angry thoughts. Our mind becomes more angry. We cultivate loving thoughts, compassionate thoughts, thoughts of gratitude. Those qualities of heart then come to kind of imbue the mind, imbue the consciousness by putting the attention there. So this is really, I find this is a really, really important part of the teachings, just to recognize that we can do this, that we, where, what am I cultivating right now? Where am I putting attention? Where am I putting my psychic energy? Is this to my well-being? Is it to my happiness to do this? Or is this, you know, is this going to lead to more suffering, you know, as I move more and more in that direction? Whatever it is, you know, not to make ourselves bad for doing it, but just to see that it doesn't lead ultimately to our well-being. So finally, and just conscious of time now, you know, what gratitude does, and there's many, many more things I could say about gratitude in a kind of, in, you know, more time. But I just want to finish up this piece by saying that gratitude really helps us remember and recognize that really with, that we're part of the web of life. It kind of breaks through our sense of separation. We recognize that we're, you know, the sense that we're kind of this isolated, atomized individual is really, I think, what was it? Einstein called it? I can't remember the exact term he used, but an error, basically, of the mind when we get caught up in separation, and that our tasks as humans is to recognize our part of this greater whole, this wider connecting with. No, you know, you could begin with those we're closest to and our families and our good friends and all of that. But ultimately including all beings, seeing ourselves as part of this family of all beings, and that this is what kind of helps break down this sense of isolation, this sense of separation. Often seeing people, Tara Brach often uses the term, you know, people we have difficulty with as the unreal other, you know, kind of two-dimensional. We don't see their real humanity. We see them as a cardboard. Oh, you're a person that believes this, or you're a person that voted for this person, you know, and we kind of put them in that box. And just recognizing that we actually pay a price for that, that we pay a price in suffering for that separation. At times it might feel good, oh, I hate this and that, but actually we suffer ourselves. So that being our, you know, our practice to open more and more to the web of life and our connection with all beings. And in the last few days, just for me, I've been reflecting on the gratitude I feel for my mother, and I've been exploring that and kind of wondering, you know, it feels very, very powerful to me, you know, the way I can experience the sadness and the grieving, but feel it held in this kind of well of gratitude. You know, and I was asking myself in the last day or two, you know, well, this is, why so much gratitude? What was it about? And I thought about it, and I thought, you know, and I talked a little about, you know, at times were hard, and, you know, my mother would get angry, and, you know, times she could be reactive. And I remember, you know, playing football, we call it soccer here, in the dining room with my brother. You know, when we were 8 or 9 years old, we'd rolled up something to become a soccer ball, you know. And she was obviously worried about all the things we were going to break. And, you know, probably 6 times or whatever, she had, stop that, you know, stop playing football in the house, you know, whole world out there to play football in. And then she kind of lost it, you know. And I remember it was kind of like one of these wrathful, fierce Tibetan deities, you know, like, and, you know, and then kind of, you know, really kind of, you know, whatever the, you know, it would be to kind of let us, you know that we really had to stop. But what was really clear was that, you know, within an hour or a few hours, it was really clear that there was no sense that she loved us, even the slightest bit less, you know, whatever we did. And later in life, when we became adults, you know, I put adults in quotes, you know, because, you know, we're making mistakes and poor choices in our lives, as probably all of us have done in different ways. You know, she would shake her head, you know, maybe at times she'd take us back in, as maybe some of us have done as parents or as children, gone back. But again, never a sense of that the love was diminished in any way, you know, and it was anything less. And I reflected on it. I said, and I thought, yes, this is it really, that I was given the gift of unconditional love. And when I really reflected on that, and I have a picture here, a photo of my mother in front of me, it's like, it's just this powerful gift. It feels like that nothing could be more powerful to receive or to give to another than unconditional love. No. And it, you know, it doesn't just mean to one person, but it could be, you know, the heart opens wider and wider, like the Buddha or the Dalai Lama or Desmond Tutu or whoever it might be, that, you know, our own parents or loved ones, that the heart opens, you know, the heart as wide as the world. This unconditional love. And I was conscious that my daughter, who lives in New York, and I see that in her with her children. You know, I see that. I see the way she raises her children. I see, you know, and I shared with her by email today that, you know, I said, you know, that was really, I had this understanding. I thought, I really got that from my mother. And, you know, my generation, I think, was wobbly. You know, it wasn't quite a direct transmission, but certainly, you know, at least it kind of more indirectly. But I see it in my daughter and the way she raises her 3 kids, you know, just as unconditional love. And I think that really this is the core, really at the core of our practice, you know, of how we cultivate an open heart. We cultivate unconditional love, you know, and as we do in the loving kindness practice, you know, we can begin where it's easiest, You know, we can begin with the loved ones. For me, with, you know, while my mother was alive, I would often, she would be the place or person I'd start with in my loving kindness practice. But then go where, you know, other loved ones, dear friends, outward people, maybe more neutral people. And that ultimately, you know, can we envision ourselves, you know, having the circle be large enough to include people that in this very, very intense period that we're living in now, people on the other side of the political aisle, which, you know, is feels very fraught right here, particularly in the area we're living in Washington, in Washington area, how painful those divisions can be. And even though it's not easy, and recognizing that we're always going to be having differences, that we don't put anyone out of our hearts, you know, that we cultivate an open heart. So we're coming to time, and I just hopefully we just have the time for one just final reflection. I'd like to just share Jack Kornfield's reflection on gratitude, and invite you in the last couple of minutes of this meditation into a reflection. You might close your eyes as I read this. It's quite relatively short. Jack says, gratitude is a gracious acknowledgement of all that sustains us, a bow to our blessings, great and small, an appreciation of the moments of good fortune that sustain our life every day. We have so much to be grateful for. Gratitude is confidence in life itself. In it, we feel how the same force that pushes grass through cracks in the sidewalk invigorates our own life. Gratitude gladdens the heart. It's not sentimental, not jealous, nor judgmental. Gratitude doesn't envy or compare. Gratitude receives in wonder the myriad offerings of the rain and the earth, the care that supports every single life. As gratitude grows, it gives rise to joy. We experience the courage to rejoice in our own good fortune and in the good fortune of others. And as you sit for this last minute or two, I just invite you, just as a final practice, to think about three good things that happened today for which you could give another person or other people some credit. Just three things. It could be a simple thing of somebody offering you an act of kindness, helping you out in some way, or even just giving you the right of way as a four-way stop. Just anything that you can touch into, or whatever you can right now. Maybe a loved one cooking a meal for you. Or bringing you something when you're sick. Or just helping you out in any way. Just connecting with this flow of life, this gratitude coming in, and how we can share it with others. And just finishing with a poem by the Irish poet Patrick Kavanagh, in memory of my mother. I do not think of you lying in the wet clay of a Monaghan graveyard. I see you walking down a lane among the poplars on your way to the station, or happily going to second mass on a summer Sunday. You meet me and you say, "Don't forget to see about the cattle." Among your earthiest words, the angels stray. And I think of you walking along a headland of green oats in June, so full of repose, so rich with life. And I see us meeting at the end of a town on a fair day by accident, after the bargains are all made, and we can walk together through the shops and stalls and markets, free in the oriental streets of thought. Oh, you are not lying in the wet clay, for it is a harvest evening now, and we are piling up the ricks against the moonlight, and you smile up at us eternally. Maybe just finishing with a breath or two, just reflecting on something you're grateful for in your life.